Hi, I'm Steve Mabb, Chair of the Australian Shareholders Association, and we're proud to be hosting the 2024 Investor Conference in Melbourne from the 19th to the 21st of May. And we're stoked that Phil, the host of this podcast, is going to be our special guest MC. If you haven't heard much about the ASA conference, it's a flagship event that attracts around 300 investors and industry professionals, including the chair of National Australia Bank this year, the chair of AGL. We have Dr. Sam Hupert, the founder and CEO of ProMedicus, and we've also got Richard White, the founder and CEO of WiseTech, coming along with many others. For a limited time, new members can enjoy special pricing on registration for the upcoming conference, along with a complimentary 12-month digital membership with the ASA. That's 2-day conference registration plus 1-year ASA membership for $499, a saving of $150. Simply search for Australian Shareholders Conference Register, click on 2-day conference non-member, enter the discount code MEM, as in member, 499, the numbers 499, so that's MEM499 to claim your special offer. Come along and meet me and Phil at the conference. We look forward to seeing you there. And I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shares for Beginners.
Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorised reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
Shares for Beginners. Weekend Watch List.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners Weekend Watch List, where we take a close look at an individual company that you may wish to consider for your watch list. It's not a recommendation to buy, but a way for you to learn how Stockopedia screens for value. Joining me today is Elio D'Amato, and we're talking Veeam Limited, ASX code VEE. And this, Elio, is not a company I've heard about, but as you say, it's a great Aussie success story that's been around for quite a few years now.
Yeah, look, a lot of people would have noticed Veeam quite recently because it's had an exceptional share price. I mean, I know we're all talking about cocoa and Bitcoin and all that sort of stuff, but I'm talking about a company here which has effectively grown threefold in share price since the end of last year. So I'm sure it's coming up on a lot of radars. And unlike the common misconception when it comes to investing in the Australian market, this was actually a profitable business generating revenue for quite some time and had effectively been growing its case. Yes, it got hit by COVID, as many do, but nonetheless, it's turned that corner and seems to be kicking goals and smooth sailing ahead, dare I say it, if I can drop that pun in, because, yeah, there's a lot to like about little old Veeam. It's one of the favourites of my partner in Shine, of course, Chris Batchelor, who often appears on this program, and it's my privilege to share it with everyone today because, of course, it has had an exceptional run recently and we'll no doubt talk about those factors that have led to this outcome.
Okay, well, tell us the Veeam story, which I think is very much a heavy metal story.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, look, we're talking about a business which started in the 60s, as all good rock stars eventually emerge. And then, of course, it developed. The name Veeam actually is an acronym of the husband and wife that actually established the business. Unfortunately, the husband, who affectionately was known by everyone as Charlie, funnily enough, he passed away 10 years after the business was founded. And then effectively the board was brought on board initially as basically a ship part builder. And they would effectively build and repair parts for ships. And then came along a board that was headed by the sons of the founders of the business. Elizabeth, who is the E part of that acronym, effectively took a step back. And since then, the company's going from strength to strength. And I think today, it probably not only obviously being closely aligned with ship repairs and ship building and all that sort of thing, but what really shot them into prominence was these gyro stabilizers, which are in effect taking very big ships, which normally get thrown around in the waves that are crashing in and around us, and effectively helps to try to stabilize or reduce the rolling motion of vessels in waves. And that's really effectively what the company does. Of course, since then, they're in things like, you know, propellers, they're in defense, they've got a whole range of commercial facilities as well. Their marine technology R&D is also quite effective. So there's many strings to their bow nowadays. And look, in effect, they're really kicking goals, particularly on the back of a recent announcement where they're going to manufacture and sell Sharrow design propellers, which are effectively the propeller that sits inside those inboard ships, those big Russian oligarch ships that eventually got taken off their hands and the like, but are still getting built because people are still making money and they want big boats. And the demand's quite strong. And with the exception of that COVID hiccup, as I talked about, their metrics are still performing well.
And those gyro stabilizers, while it stops the rolling of the ships, it's not just about avoiding seasickness, is it? It actually makes the running of these ships much more efficient.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, that's the first impression for most of us. We get on there, we don't want to get seasick. In fact, many still do, irrespective of the fact there's a gyro stabilizer on board. But you're right. Obviously, by controlling that motion, that rolling motion of the waves, it enables the ship to perform far more effectively and efficiently, and then allows things like the propellers to do the work that they need to in order to drive things. So totally correct. I know we use that as the visual, the front end idea, but as always with most things, there's a more sinister and far more effective impact, and ultimately that is to run these very big ships efficiently.
So what do the financials look like, Elio?
Yeah, pretty good. Look, I mean, from a Stockopedia perspective, we're talking about a stock which is high quality, and it's been high quality for quite some time. I mean, if I go back and my eye immediately casts back to before this recent run where the share price has gone up quite strongly, the stock has been consistently high quality. So back then it was around 87, of course, on the back of their latest half-year result. That has improved a little bit more. It's now 91. I suppose momentum is obviously good. I don't think anyone's going to be shocked by that, and has been improving on the back of this recent run recently. But I do need to talk about valuation, because as always with these quality businesses, if they're doing well, we often have to pay to play. Now, before the stock went on its run, it was ranking as a 47, which is still not the most outstanding value metrics that are out there in regards to a business. But when it comes to the value metrics, it's sort of middle of the table. Well, of course, that's been gobbled up recently given the strong run in price, and it now sits at 18. So investors do need to be aware that if they do want some of this little great Aussie success story, which has now been around for over 50 years doing what it does, then they are going to have to pay to play to be part of it. And it makes sense. I mean, we're talking about a company which is growing revenue, notwithstanding the little COVID glitch, which sort of was only a mild pullback at the initial start, and then there were a few little issues in 2022. They've got used to the idea of the rising costs of doing business, and their revenue keeps growing and is forecast to continue to grow. Not only that, but pleasingly, from my perspective, I got to see also operating margins for the business have returned to levels that they haven't seen since 2020, 2021. So that gives me a little bit of confidence that what was gobbling up all their capital earlier has been improving. And you can see that because rates of return on asset, rates of return on capital there, and return on equity, of course, they've been improving in recent times. Still not shooting the lights out if you're an absolute trader. So if you're looking at benchmarks, as it were, and wanting above or below, but they are rising, and they've been rising consistently now for a few years. So when you're growing sales growth and you're improving the return to investors, then that's got to be good. And that you would expect to translate to an increase in profitability, which the company has been able to do. And as I mentioned, you got to pay to play because the PE is a little bit high, but a forecast PE of 26 is, look, it's lofty, but it's not necessarily eye-watering just at this stage. And if you want part of this success story that becomes much bigger in the future than what it is today, then you will need to do that. Of course, investors will be wondering when they get taken over, given the fact that we're such a small fry here in Australia relative to all the big global players that are out there, not only big shipbuilders, as it were, that are commercial, but governments as well in regards to their technology. One can't deny the strength of that R&D, Phil. You're only as good as the next future products that come on board. And when you look at the contracts that they've been winning, you know, there's been a lot. Like, for example, the Strategic Marine, they brought forward an order of 12 gyro stabilizers, I should say. The government contracts, they keep winning as well. I think the company said there's a total addressable market of some $2.6 billion as well. That's US dollars. So there's definitely a lot to like in regards to this return to a move to profitability and improved margins in recent times. And helping getting that down to the cash flow as well is also incredibly pleasing. So, yeah, just doing great things that many of us don't see, but we would notice it if we weren't riding with one.
And there's also those two words, defence contracts.
But just being a shipbuilder isn't necessarily a panacea. I mean, long-term investors in a company like Austal will tell you, for example, that it can be quite cyclical. Get these contracts, they've got to be delivered, but you're only as good as the next contract you sign. So there is a bit of that in regards to Veeam, but the good news is there is an element of more consistency and growing demand for their services, which in our view rates them a little higher in regards to an operation rather than an Austal, as it were. But nonetheless, there is strong demand. And yes, you're right, underpinned by a strong element of defence contracts, which do help the company, but they can't rest on that laurel. They do have to go out and generate more business. And the good news is they've been doing that successfully.
Are you picking shares on gut instinct, buying on press tips or rumours? Do you struggle to find the time to keep up with the research and analysis that goes into evaluating potential stocks? Stockopedia are pleased to offer a special deal to listeners of this podcast, a 14-day free trial and a 10% discount on the first year of membership. Sign up now at y.stockopedia.com/sfb. There's no better time to access the most comprehensive, easy-to-use investing toolbox for DIY share investors. 10% off, 14-day free trial, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's y.stockopedia.com/sfb. And we all love a founder-led business. How many of the shares on issues do the family control?
Oh, look, they control quite a bit. There's two ways that they control. The biggest holding comes from Veeam Corporation, which holds around 50% of the entire business. Now, the Miosevich family, who effectively own that, they are the ones that control that. And they're, and John and Mark in particular, two of the sons, there's also Brad, but he's less involved. They effectively do pull the reins in this business and have a big say in regards to its future direction and where it's going. And I think given such significant skin in the game, their family's future prosperity is basically aligned with the success or failure, as it were, of this business. So therefore, there is a fair amount in it that basically they left everything on the table. There is also a small Vilkov funds management holding, which isn't all that large, but that is effectively owned by the business as well. Look, the largest, I suppose, corporate investor in there is Perennial Value Management. They hold around 12% of the business, which is kind of nice. But look, I've got to say that stock is pretty tightly held. I mean, it's got 69% of its stock that is held by the major shareholders. So there isn't all that much that's available on free float. So again, that adds to that story of having to pay to play in order to be part of this business. And the fact they've only got 131 million shares on issue is also quite pleasing because, I mean, to be frank, when you see companies that issue shares like it's toilet paper, that often raises a question. In fact, and I know that's a topic we've talked about before in the past. So look, it trades around 130,000 shares on a daily basis on average. That price had been much lower, obviously, than where it is sort of now because of that elevated run the stock has had. And look, to be quite frank, in our view, we think that is actually quite justified. So look, rest assured, if you want to back the jockey, Phil, this is definitely a stock to be able to do that on. But of course, there are upsides and downsides in regard to that. But at the moment, the bulls are running, of course.
So are there any risks looking into the future that we've got to be aware of? I mean, part of it, obviously, is that it's such a small company on the ASX.
Yes, that's right. I mean, so it obviously carries a smaller cap risk premium. We need to accept and appreciate that if the broader market swings by a little bit, this guy will swing by a lot. That's just the nature of what it is. One of the other risks that the company has already faced, as it were, was COVID, because of course they were, obviously signing contracts in regards to new ships, and we weren't allowed anywhere to go out. So therefore, that impacted their earnings margins. The rising costs of doing business also hurts them and impacts them, as they do need the brain power, as it were, to go out and actually do what it is they do. The Russians invading Ukraine was also a massive risk for them because, of course, a large portion of their clients were those big super yachts that they were building, stabilizing those and building propellers for those. But, of course, that had been taken away from them as the West had taken a stand against the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So this is a company that is well-versed to facing risks. And I did touch on that fact that, you know, the next contract, they're only as good as their next contract. So that is obviously something investors need to be aware of. This is not a blank check, as it were, to just write your own retirement. You do need to obviously keep abreast of what it is that's winning and how it's actually improving. And look, that cash flow is improving, the earnings per share is improving, and those gyro stabilizer sales rose quite strongly in the recent half. I think they were up some 200%. And yes, they're building out their agreements, so that does spread that web out, as it were, to ensure a more consistent flow, but they still have to win the business, and that is an ongoing risk. So as long as investors remember that being small and being a, you know, an engineering business, as it were, notwithstanding they're involved with boats, it does impact the overall price. Recently, it's been to the good side, so I'm very happy with that, but we need to appreciate that price is zig and zag, and that's a technical term, and when it pulls back, no doubt, though, all those good points I was talking to, they'll be pointed out as being bad points for the business. So if you accept those risks and understand that, then that will ultimately support your investment in a company like Veeam. And of course, if you do like supporting local Aussies overseas, then this is obviously one to do, because chances are you won't get to experience it all that much, but its services are essential.
Haven't you got that super yacht in the background there in your garage?
I wish, then I'd probably retire.
They are a heavy engineering company, but a lot of that is quite high tech and requires a lot of research and development. How much are they spending on R&D?
It can't be understated how important R&D is to this business. Obviously, a guarded secret in regards to what it is they're doing until it's actually released. But I looked at their last annual report, and the company spends some $9.6 million on R&D. And that is critical because, of course, staying ahead of the game will ensure that their products are in demand going forward because, of course, everything improves. So the good news is the company sees R&D not only as a point to staying relevant, but a point to improving margins. And the evidence of that came through in that recent half-year report, as I alluded to, also replicating the levels that were achieved not that long ago. And we need to remember that, you know, margins had been skinny in regards to this business, which means it puts them at risk because, of course, if you win multi-million dollars worth of contracts, if you're only generating a small percent in terms of profit and therefore cash flow, that is a high risk for the business. But when you've got margins that are improving and, in the words of the company, being driven a lot by R&D, that is a really good thing. So I point to investors to look at capital expenditure in order to get an understanding in regards to, you know, a lot of the R&D spending will be captured in there. And in our view, in regards to an engineering business like Veeam, it's crucially important. In fact, it's vital if it wants to survive in a new world.
So, Elio, any final thoughts?
No final thoughts, other than it carries the risks that all investors need to be aware of, notwithstanding the fact that it has low bankruptcy risk and the cash flow is definitely making its way to the bank account. I think, and obviously the liquidity issue that we discussed, it's that great story. And I think that when you see a strong order book moving forward, when you see the company feeling quite optimistic in regards to the outlook going ahead, I mean, they're pretty guarded in regards to that, but they do expect a similar revenue and profit outcome in the second half, which justifies the valuation in our view. Therefore, if they're able to continue to improve margins, cash flow, get them to pre-COVID levels, I think V may be worth the risk at this early stage of its corporate life, in a relative sense, but they've been around a while, as we've talked.
Elio D'Amato, thanks very much for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Phil.
Thanks for listening to Shares for Beginners. You can find more at sharesforbeginners.com. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player, or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.